Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast. I'm Yo Samson Folk, and perhaps overdue, but extremely welcome, a very fun, very insightful guest today, Saha Abdi. And he's done a lot of work over the years, most notably Yahoo Sports, Raptors Republic, Hoop Meg, a lot of contributions, a lot of insights shared. Saha, how are you doing today, man?
I'm good, man. It's good to be on. I mean, this is the Raptors Republic podcast, so I feel like I'm right at home.
Yeah, how many episodes had you done with William Liu?
On the Raptors Republic?
It would anywhere, happen. Honestly.
Oh, man. Yahoo, I've done probably 5 to 10 things with him. Raptors Republic, I can't even count. I'm not sure when he was here before. Well over 15, maybe 20 things.
That's a lot of podcasting. How do you feel after a podcast and before a podcast? Do you get nervous at all?
You know what's funny, man? A few years ago, 2017, when I first started writing and then covering the Raptors, like on the Raptors Republic blog, I think my first ever time where I was really, I guess you could say, I'm being honest, I was frightened, man, is when I was first on Sportsnet, Fan 590. So I think that was 2018, I believe. And I was absolutely shaking. Like, this was like, podcasts were like, okay, like, I got to sound professional. I got to sound like this. I got to sound like that. Maybe a little less professional when I'm with Will Liu. I can joke around with him a little bit. But when I was asked to be on Fan 590 to speak about the Raptors a couple years ago, I didn't even know what room to be in my house. Should I go to the basement? Should I be in my own room? I didn't know what to do. And then I had to like sit up. I was trying to take pointers from like friends, like, hey, like, what do you guys do during these type of things? And people were telling me, sit up, like, act like they can see you and blah, blah, blah. And it'll just, the professionalism will show through your voice. And I was pretty shaky, honestly, my first time, but I've been there, I think probably 8 to 10 times now. So I've gotten more comfortable with just recordings in general.
That's good. I'm glad to have a professional on the other end of things. And so we'll swing right into it then.
Yeah.
Okay. Something that, you know, to talk about William Liu, something he pointed out on Twitter, I think it got acknowledged in his 10 things, something that quite a few Raptors people have talked about. Horns, very prominent in the Raptors game against the Spurs. It was the bulk of their late game offense. It's obviously a very popular set to run in the NBA. There's a lot of variations. What did you think of running a nice three-man unit for those types of plays with Fred, Pascal, and Kyle down the stretch?
You know, it's, first of all, the Raptors losing that game, that was difficult to watch. I just want to get that out of the way. But, I mean, the three-man unit with Lowry, VanVleet, and Siakam, I like the different actions they're using all three of them in. I noticed it's quite a stark difference from last year, where Marc Gasol used to initiate plays quite often last season at the top of the key. And I think now a lot more of the onus has fell on the guards. Now, normally when you think of Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, you know, running the offense, you think that's more than fine. I mean, that's what most people consider an elite point guard, and a guy who's a rising point guard in the league, who was a borderline all-star last season, then Kyle Lowry, who's been a perennial all-star for 6-7 seasons now. So having the ball in their hands a little more is obviously a good thing. And then Siakam, I feel like Chris Finch, the dubbed offensive coordinator for the Toronto Raptors, has kind of tried putting Siakam in different positions on the court. And like you said earlier, during training camp, he was going to put Siakam in places on the court that favored him a little more. We're still seeing a little more of the same with Siakam. Still looks, he looked good. I mean, the first, I want to say 6-7-ish quarters of the season, kind of fell off there late in the game. But again, from what I want to see from those three is for them to just, I think it's all going to work more clearly if Siakam can find places on the court where he doesn't look like he's, I mentioned this in the last game, he doesn't really look like he's trying so hard to score a basket, if that makes sense. There's sometimes where Siakam gets the ball and he doesn't really have a bag, if anyone knows what I'm talking about. I mean, you see it sometimes with Jason Tatum where he just looks like maybe he picked up his dribble a little too early, but he can still create something out of it. sometimes it just looks like Pascal's flailing a lot too much. And for me, that's something that I want to see him improve a lot. Just kind of, I feel like when you watch Pascal, it's more or less like he's making it up on the go, which sometimes is good and sometimes it doesn't really work against longer wings. And then for Kyle and Fred, it's just Fred specifically, he just needs to hit his shots. I mean, he's a guy who had a really good game versus the Spurs, a team that's very long, has guys like Lonnie Walker, DeJounte Murray, guys who are disruptive defensively, that new rookie Devin Vassell as well, or Vassell, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. But I'm not really as concerned with Toronto as a whole as much as other people. I know, you know, I hopped on my PS5 the other day. I'm not trying to rub it in. have it. And a lot of my friends were panicking. What's wrong with the Raptors? We're going to be an 8th seed this season. And I kind of just told them, okay, guys, relax. Like, you know, this is still the same Toronto Raptors. Maybe a little bit different. Obviously, Ibaka and Gasol aren't there. Are they a little worse talent-wise? Yeah, I guess you could say so. But I'm not really concerned with the 0-2 Raptors right now.
Yeah, as far as if the expectations are that they're a consummate contender, they're there with, like, you know, the Bucks obviously have to prove it, but if they're expected to be of the same caliber of the Bucks, of the Heat, you know, the Heat, they might be closer, but Clippers and Lakers, I should say, to be more specific, like that type of contender, then your expectations off the jump, probably misplaced. But this 0-2 start, I don't think says anything troubling about what should still be a top six team in the East. You talked about Pascal, a lack of a bag, which certainly is something he's trying to develop, especially if you're going to be a first option. You can see by breakdowns, he's obviously doing a lot more scoring in the first and third quarters. In the fourth quarter, it made sense against the Spurs. He was gassed. It's 41 and 43 minutes, I think. But we're still waiting to see some late game creation from him. It was a little bit negative, the commentary, which is deserved. Yeah. But let's switch to something positive about Pascal, the playmaking. Yeah. I think he's been really good passing the ball as far as creating to above the break into the corners, pretty good. He's obviously not like Kyle creating layups a lot of the time. But what have you thought of him in that role so far?
Yeah, like I said before, the burden of playmaking has kind of fell on the guards and has just split up a little more with everybody else on the roster. You're seeing OG, even Matt Thomas is getting a lot more opportunities to playmake. With Pascal specifically, just naturally him being an all NBA second teamer, teams know, like, this is one of the big offensive threats for Toronto. This is one of the better, I want to say, slashers in the league. And so when he drives, I mean, naturally he's going to get 2, 3, 4 pairs of eyes looking at him. So once that happens and a guy shuffles in towards him, not even for a double, but just that gravity that he brings to the paint where he can just attract guys inside, I think it's gotten guys open. And I think Pascal knows that. I mean, last season it was more or less like, okay, Kawhi's not here. So when I drive, are guys going to help? And I feel like early on in the season, he was getting a lot of one-on-one opportunities. He was absolutely dominating teams. And then teams started figuring him out, I think, later into the season and into the bubble. But I think this year it's more or less, okay, if that first read is gone when I drive in the corner, I already know that elbow is going to be there. And I think that just comes with IQ for Pascal. He's just become a much smarter player. He's prided himself on just developing his basketball IQ. And that just comes with time with Pascal. I mean, I think he's 25, 26 now. So you look at him and you're like, hey, this is a guy that's probably been in the league for 5, 6 years, but really this is his fourth year, I believe. Right. So, I mean, it just comes with basketball IQ. And I think that's the main thing feeding his growing playmaking ability.
Yeah. So we talked about the main three, sparingly about Kyle, not so much about Fred, but they are, you know, effectively known quantities in what they're going to bring to the floor. Fred obviously can improve in some areas, especially playmaking out of the pick and roll. And we've seen a development with his mid-range jumper a little bit. That's great to see. But the tertiary guys in the starting lineup, OG Anunoby, Aaron Baines, OG just signing that new extension. Aaron Baines supposed to be a very nice mix of some of what Ibaka brought as far as volume and willingness to shoot, and like a smidge of the passing chops and big boy defense that Gasol provided. He's in the starting lineup. What have you thought of him so far? And if you want to touch on OG after that, go for it.
We're talking about OG, are we not?
Aaron or OG, whoever you want to talk about.
Okay, so I'll start with OG. OG's a guy that, I mean, going into the season, before the season even began, I mean, most people had him pegged as an MIP candidate. And obviously the reason for that is the departures, as well as what people saw in the bubble, the flashes they saw offensively from OG. OG's always been known as a plus defender. I mean, when he first came into the league, he was a plus defender. And you don't get that very often. He came in, his body was fit for the NBA. He was tasked by Dwayne Casey early on in his career to guard some of the best wings in the league. I believe it was it his rookie year where the Cavs swept the Raptors?
Yeah.
I believe that was his rookie year. I mean, he was guarding LeBron a lot of that series. And I mean, LeBron is LeBron, but for your coach to have that much faith in you to guard the best, one of the best players to ever play basketball for the majority of a series, I mean, that's a big, big thing. So, and then now we're 3-4 years later with OG, and he's become one of the elite wing defenders in the league with a blossoming offensive game. A guy who, I think one of the key things with OG is that he really understands what he needs to get better at. He said early on in the season, I believe in an interview, that he had to really develop his off the dribble game. And then on top of that, develop his playmaking. So those are two things that we saw kind of Pascal develop in his second and third year. And OG can, I don't want to say he can become a Pascal. Maybe he never really gets that smooth offensively, but he's an elite shooter, around 40% last season. And then obviously an elite wing defender. And if he can just blossom into one of the better 3-and-D guys in the league, he's well worth the contract the Raptors just gave him. And then on to Aaron Baines. Aaron Baines was probably the best option the Raptors had in terms of a big man, in terms of a replacement for Marc Gasol. Big guy, strong guy, a guy that maybe isn't the rebounder you want inside, but a guy that exudes physicality. A great culture fit for Toronto, has never really had, you know, off the court issues, a guy who can stretch it out, shoot the three, a pretty good pick and roll guy. So, I mean, Aaron Baines has shown in the first two games that this is exactly almost what the Raptors were expecting. But again, if you've been watching the Raptors, you just feel like when you watch the guards with Aaron Baines, maybe the chemistry is not there yet, which is okay. I mean, Marc Gasol was there for a year and a half with Toronto, and it just felt like it was just seamless. His chemistry with Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet and the rest of the team. But I think that's going to come with Aaron Baines. But I'm excited. I'm excited to see him grow. He's a bit of an older guy now, but I think he's going to be a plus guy for Toronto this season for sure.
Yeah, I think 34 as it currently stands. He's older, and
Yeah.
A journeyman, for sure. As far as the OG trying to develop the things that Pascal developed, there are two of the toughest jumps in the NBA is what Pascal is currently trying to do, which is fringe all-NBA player. And I know he made second team, but as far as the full body of work, including the bubble, I think a lot of people would have ended up leaving him off the all-NBA teams. If that's fair, not super sure. But I think just to cover my bases, fringe all-NBA team. He could be on one. He could be left off. He's not surefire this year. Trying to make the jump from fringe guy to no doubt about it will be on the first or second team every year. That is a huge jump. That's really tough. Absolutely. And the second toughest jump is the one OG's trying to make, whereas you've established yourself as a good shooter. You can shoot with volume in catch and shoot. He's made a lot of late game shots in the bubble, in the playoffs. In previous playoff seasons, you brought up the series against, you know, LeBron, where they got swept right before LeBron hit that insane fading one-handed shot. OG hit a three to tie the game. And that's the kind of presence he has to finish late in the game. So he's trying to pick up the bag that Pascal picked up last season, where you're not just the tertiary guy, where you can get some structured offense kind of moved your way and you can start playmaking out of it. You can start creating out of it. Even Norm Powell gets some pin downs in structured offense for the Raptors. I'm excited to see if he can do that this year. But again, Pascal, I think, provides a linear type of progression that a lot of people haven't seen in the NBA. So as you said, is he going to be Pascal? Will he make that jump? Maybe it's too tough to say, but, you know, Raptors fans can hope. As far as Aaron Baines, I think the offense was coming along decently. He certainly played well against the Spurs. Mm-hmm. Defensively, probably the biggest problem that this team has had so far.
Yeah.
To be honest, I've liked quite a bit the offensive process. As you said, there's a lot of interesting sets that they've run, especially for their top three. Baines defensively. Do you think at any point he's capable of buoying the back line where the Raptors are playing this really rotation stunt heavy type of defense where there's so much movement? And as you say, Gasol walked right into it. He has that big, ginormous, non-ironic galaxy basketball brain. Yeah. And he was able to make incredible reads at the back line. Baines will need probably weeks, months, a long time to get there if he ever does. What do you think the ceiling is for this defense after these first couple games?
Oh, man. It's difficult because, I mean, after the first couple games, it's very easy to say, okay, this team's going to be a massive defensive disappointment from what people were expecting. But I do genuinely think Aaron Baines is going to pick it up. Is he going to ever be at the level defensively in terms of what he can bring to the Raptors system that Marc Gasol or even Ibaka could at the five? Probably not. Marc Gasol, again, now I think people are starting to realize that Raptors fans are really starting to realize you don't have to be this athletic, you know, specimen to be a good defender in the NBA. I mean, Marc Gasol, no one would really consider him athletic. The guy can barely dunk, with all due respect. Like, I mean, in games, we watch Marc Gasol get it under the hoop and he just refuses to dunk. This is a guy defensively who's just light years mentally ahead of everyone else. I mean, if there was one or two guys that understood the Raptors defensive system, it was probably Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol better than anyone. And then you lose one of those guys and then you bring in a guy who's played, what, four games for Toronto, including the preseason, five games maybe. So is Baines going to get there? I think he will. There will be a drop off defensively for the team. Like you said, the team, you know, their whole defensive scheme is based on rotations and making you think you have that open three and then getting there really late. And it's really a contested three. So we'll see. We'll see if Baines picks it up. I mean, it hasn't looked great so far. But again, if you were expecting Aaron Baines to be a clone of Marc Gasol, that's not going to happen. If you were expecting this Raptors team to be just as, you know, great as they were last year, that might not happen either. But I mean, I pegged them in another podcast I did with Sean Woodley as a second round team that loses in the second round to a Boston or to a Milwaukee or even to a Philly. I mean, Philly is a very good team this year as well. And people didn't like that, but I mean, that was my honest opinion. And I'm not more confident in that opinion just because Toronto started off the season 0-2. I'm sticking with it. I just think Toronto has their ceilings kind of shortened this year as a team. And I think when it really comes down to it, it's going to come down to their defense and their lack of size.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. And Philly, I mean, if Joel Embiid is having a good series, there's a lot of teams that Philly can punch up against, let alone the Raptors. But yeah, as you say, the Raptors probably profiling as a team that it would be a genuine upset if they were out in the first round. You'd be like, wow, I can't believe this team was out in the first round. Exactly. But you would also be probably equally surprised if they went up against a Milwaukee or a Boston and somehow punched their way into the Eastern Conference Finals. The ceiling doesn't seem to be there. And that's from, you know, an eye test, I guess, opinion and an analytics opinion. There's not much backing that, but it is what it is. So we're looking at a team that's added a few pieces and the defense is in complete disarray. The offense looks better. And two games against the Pelicans and the Spurs. You win or you lose, probably shouldn't change the fabric of your predictions. You know what I mean? Like those teams, you win or you lose against them, it doesn't really matter. But there is fun to be gleaned from these games. For me, I've really enjoyed Matt Thomas, the way they've been able to use them. They've ran a lot of sets for him, trying to get him looks, pin downs, flare screens, lots of stuff like that. What have you thought of him so far? And his insertion into the rotation, seemingly ironclad.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Thomas is a guy I feel like has to be in the rotation. And I say that because, I mean, the attraction. I talked about gravity earlier for Siakam when he drives to the hoop. The attraction Matt Thomas brings with him off the ball is actually stunning. Like you, for Raptors fans who I mean, naturally your job as a Raptors fan when you watch games is to just watch the ball, right? You're just watching the guy dribble. All right, pass it to the next guy. He's dribbling, pass it to the next guy. I mean, you really have to watch Matt Thomas off the ball and the amount of attention he gets from the defense. Guys are stuck to him like glue. And this is a really good thing for Toronto because if you pair a Matt Thomas with a Kyle Lowry or a Fred VanVleet or even both and a Siakam on the court, and then you have Baines or whoever at the five, Boucher. I mean, these are all four of those guys, maybe I want to say maybe except for Boucher, are guys that can win one-on-one matchups pretty easily. That guys that can come off screens and do things for this offense. So I think with Matt Thomas, they've kind of expanded his role where he's just not a, hey, I'm going to be running around like JJ Redick off the screen. Let's see if I have it, you know, type guy. They're really giving it to him, maybe setting screens for him. He's getting a lot more on ball work, and then his off ball work, they're letting him create a lot more, which is really good. And Matt Thomas is a pretty good passer. I mean, this is something I didn't expect myself. I mean, he's a guy that's consistently finding the open man. We even saw it in the preseason against Miami, that last game. And then also, who did they play the first two games? Was it Charlotte? I believe they played Charlotte.
The first two games.
Yeah, and he looked good. I mean, Matt Thomas is a guy that I think has earned an early spot, at least in the rotation. Nick Nurse has kind of refused to play the young guys, Terrence Davis and Malachi, early on in the season. Which some people, I guess, would not be okay with. Some fans, or I've seen some fans already call for Terrence Davis to be playing and Malachi Flynn. But I mean, if there's one guy that doesn't deserve to have his rotation spot taken away from him, it's probably Matt Thomas.
Yeah, I've been really happy with him so far. As you say, not just a shooter. There is passing touch there. He looks far more dynamic with a picked up dribble as far as how he maneuvers with his pivot foot to get into space and rise up against different types of closeouts. He is rapid in relocation. And even when he puts the ball down, it doesn't look like, you know, there are players with every fan base. When they put the ball on the floor, everybody starts hand wringing and saying like, hell no, like get the ball to somebody else.
Yeah,
every fan base has it.
Yeah.
Matt Thomas is not that guy. Defensively, he's never going to be incredible. You'll find both sides of the spectrum. Some people will seemingly try to indicate that he's actually a very good defender. That I don't understand. But I also don't understand the fatalistic he's getting killed every possession, because I haven't found that to be true either. So his contributions have been extremely, they've been improving. And I hope they continue to do so. And I think as far as guys who have inserted themselves into the rotation and who deserve to be in that top eight, he's made a really, really interesting case for himself. Another guy, Chris Boucher, who had a hellacious game against the Spurs. Truly, probably the best game of his career. Mm-hmm. An absurd amount of blocks, offensive rebounds, never die, never quit type of plays, chasing the ball on both ends, made it rain from downtown. The whole Chris Boucher deal. What did you think about him? Is that an indicator for how he might do in the future, or is this a hot game to you?
No, I feel like Chris Boucher is a guy that's probably going to be a mainstay in Toronto's rotation. This is a guy that, for Chris Boucher, I feel like he's kind of stepped into, I want to say, the void left by Serge Ibaka, I mean, admirably. He's been a two-way monster for Toronto. He's a guy that has protected the rim. He's a guy that's been stretching it out beyond the arc. I mean, he had 22 points. He had 7 blocks versus San Antonio. I mean, seven blocks. I mean, that's that's incredible. That is like, I personally, 7 blocks is absolutely incredible. So, I mean, for Boucher, that means not only is he protecting the rim, but I mean, it's one thing to really like, if you've ever played basketball, it's one thing to attempt a block and to actually like get the block or get the foul or whatever. And people say, you know, Chris Boucher is very, very prone to jumping too much and to, you know, falling for pump fakes. But I mean, 7 blocks is 7 blocks. And then he also had 10 rebounds. And that just shows his effort he was showing. And then that's just defensively. And then, I mean, offensively, he doesn't look like a liability. He looks like a guy that, if anything, he's been a plus for Toronto offensively. You want to see him on the court for Toronto offensively. And I mean, it helped for Toronto because, like we said, Baines didn't really have a good game versus San Antonio. So Chris Boucher, I mean, earned his minutes. He earned his minutes on the floor. So, I mean, Nick Nurse said it best. He has to focus on defense for Chris Boucher first. The offensive game is going to come. He has to run the floor. He has to be there for those transition opportunities. From an offensive perspective, the development is there. Is Chris Boucher going to have 22, 10, and 7 every game? No, I mean, absolutely not. But if he can be a plus two-way guy for Toronto, who knows? I mean, Nick Nurse might not have a choice. He might have to start Chris Boucher, I mean, later in the season if this continues. I mean, we talked about Norman Powell early on in the season, you know, playing a very prominent role this season as a sixth man, and he's kind of been too. So I mean, Chris Boucher might just be the first guy coming off the bench, at least in the short term, while Norman Powell picks it up.
Yeah, Chris Boucher, the impact he had in the last game, I thought was immense. Awesome performance for him. I don't follow him on IG. I probably should, but the running joke is that he puts every highlight he's ever had on his Instagram story, right? So he's going to overload that. And there's a journalist who writes for the Boston Globe, I believe, Gary Washburn. And I don't mean to say anything bad about his writing. I don't read his stuff. I don't read anything about the Celtics particularly, but he gave Andre Drummond a Defensive Player of the Year vote last year. And I hope he caught Chris Boucher's game yesterday, because maybe Boucher will get a vote at the end of the year.
Goodness gracious. I mean, Andre Drummond. If he saw this game, if Andre Drummond's getting a Defensive Player of the Year vote for what he did last season, Chris Boucher just might be the best defensive player to ever play basketball from just solely what he did. Solely what he did versus San Antonio.
Yeah, but you do bring up an important point, is that Boucher, if he's running the floor, if he's giving his effort defensively, his length, and especially playing next to a lot of minutes next to Kyle Lowry, he's going to find his way into buckets just by proxy of how close he is to Lowry. Lowry's very talented as a passer, can lead guys into layups, can lead guys into wide open three-pointers. And if he's getting out in transition, Chris Boucher is not afraid to stick his nose in and head straight to the rim, even if there's a guy waiting there. There is points, rebounds, and blocks abound just waiting for Chris Boucher this year if the minutes are there. So even though he had bad preseason games to start things off against Charlotte, he was much better against the Heat in the third game. I think he's been very, very good in the first two games of the year. I've been very happy with his performance so far. And as you say, if Baines is going to continue to lack a little bit defensively, which, I mean, there's lots of blame to go around for the defensive struggles the Raptors have had. But if Baines continues to lack and they want some extra scoring pop thrown in, maybe they do throw Boucher in there for a little bit. Something interesting. Okay, let's talk about Norm Powell first, and then we'll get into what I want to talk about projecting that Philly game a little bit. Norm Powell has been actually abysmal to start the year. He was great last year, and so consistent as a shooter, as a finisher at the rim, even though it is obviously subsidized by a lot of transition makes. But either way, he was like 78th or 80th percentile per cleaning the glass as a finisher for wings and guards. That's awesome. Good for him. And he did it returning from a bunch of injuries. So that makes me think this is just a hiccup, because Norm displayed an immense amount of consistency last year. What do you think? Is last year the anomaly, or is this the anomaly? What's your take on the Norm of it all?
I think this year is the anomaly. I mean, Norm is if you really watch the game, I had to rewatch it. I missed the first quarter of the game, so I rewatched the entire game, and Norm was hitting shots, missing shots, I want to say, that he normally hits. I mean, this isn't like this guy's shooting these contested, you know, awful three-point attempts or going to the rim and just running into people with no regard, you know, for human life. Norm Powell is struggling to finish at the rim, where traditionally in his career he's been very, very good. But we've also noticed with Norm Powell the Raptors drafted him, since we traded Grievous Vasquez for that Norm Powell selection, and he's been a Toronto Raptor, we've noticed that his game relies a lot on confidence. And that's a lot of the
and OG, Raptors. Right?
Yeah, that's
Didn't
a lot of the
Toronto future pick became OG
in OG that as well. Previous exactly, trade? Yeah. One of the Jesus, better picks man. In franchise history. One of the better trades, I should say. But Norm Powell is a confidence guy, just like I think Siakam's a confidence guy. I feel like it's going to take maybe a few games for Norm Powell to really get into it. Has he been a streaky guy in his career? Sure. I mean, we saw a lot more consistency last season with Norm Powell. But this is just, like you said, it's been abysmal. It's been like he can't get anything right. Defensively, he looks like a mess compared to last season. Offensively, he can't buy a shot. Again, you could argue he's always been maybe a bit of an inconsistent player, or streaky, whichever word you want to use. But these two games have just been awful for Norm Powell. And then naturally, as a fan of the Raptors, people are probably thinking, well, overreacting, I want to say, maybe, well, can we trade this guy? What's going on? Norm Powell this, Norm Powell that. I mean, you got to let the guy rock for a little bit. Let his play simmer. You know, let it rock. Norm Powell had a fantastic year for Toronto as their sixth man. This is his contract year. Technically it is. He does have a player option that Toronto probably hopes he'll be opting out of, because obviously that means he either earned a bigger contract. And then, or it just gives them more cap space, right, heading into the offseason. So, I mean, it's kind of a win-win if he does opt out of that player option. But for the Toronto team, do you even want to get to that point? Is Norm going to be looked at as a trading block option for Toronto? You know, we've heard the Harden rumors nonstop over the last couple weeks. I don't really want to get into that, but I mean, Norm Powell is a guy that if this continues, Ujiri might have to start, you know, looking at other options with Norm. Maybe Nurse throws him into the starting lineup, tries to get his confidence up. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see what happens with Norm. But I definitely do think this is an anomaly, and I do expect him to turn it around.
Did you watch Rockets versus Blazers last night?
I watched the highlights. I did not watch the
man. That there's a level of stupid that James Harden can start playing basketball at. It is madness, and it was on display last night. But I like the positivity around Norm. It isn't just the last year thing. It's his finishing has been progressing in a positive direction for some time, has his three-point shooting. There's like a three-year trend that says he is a better than 37, maybe closer to 40% three-point shooter. Yeah. I think the Raptors fans should believe in that. I think that there should be enough goodwill. But I also think, coming off of a championship team and a team that, you know, I think a lot of people were disappointed that they didn't beat the Celtics, there's a little bit of antsiness in the, I guess I would say, the fan base. So, and Norm looks like the easiest guy to move contracts with. Is that fair? Probably not. Our fan base is trying to trade people all the time. Hell yeah, dude. I'm sure there's Warriors fans who are saying trade Curry and, you know, rebuild, something like that. Or, you know, there's a number of things regardless. But I'm glad you have the positive look for Norm, because I think I do as well. And I'd expect him to turn it around. There's lots of things to like in his game. Okay. End of bench stuff. as you said, Terrence Davis, Malachi Flynn, a lot of people pining for minutes from those two. I've seen especially for Malachi Flynn. I think he was awesome in the preseason, both defensively and as a decision maker with the ball in his hands. DeAndre Bembry factors into that as well. What do you think of those three players and how they might factor in down the stretch? Are you cheering for one in particular?
With Malachi Flynn, I want to get minutes. I mean, I was on the Malachi Flynn, you know, train during the preseason. He looked phenomenal. He looked, even if you include the starters, he looked like one of the best players on the Raptors during that preseason. So he's a guy that just looks like he belongs. A guy that's IQ is off the charts for a guy who's a rookie. Defensively, he's a menace. I mean, there's so many opportunities versus Charlotte. And then their last game of the preseason as well, where the other team had a transition opportunity and Flynn is just there popping the ball out of people's hands and, you know, playing this press defense. That's just, he's annoying. I mean, as an offensive player, he's just annoying to have you guard. I mean, he's just the guy that I wouldn't want him guarding me. If I'm in the NBA, if I'm at the YMCA, if I'm across the street at the local community center, I do not want Malachi Flynn anywhere near me. So do I want to see Flynn get minutes? For sure. He's a guy that's playmaking ability is really good. This is a guy who was one of the best passers in the draft. I personally didn't, you know, focus on this draft compared to drafts in the past. So I didn't know he was as good as a defender as advertised. I've been following some Raptors, people who are more focused on the draft, looking at little notes that they've made on Malachi Flynn, you know, before he was drafted by Toronto. And I mean, they knew that this guy was a menace defensively. So I want to see Malachi get minutes. I want to see him get, even if it's 8 to 10 as a super sub, just bringing him in, seeing if he can change things, change the momentum a bit in the game. And then on to DeAndre Bembry, and then obviously redacted. DeAndre Bembry, I want to see him. I want to see him only really get. I want to see him play kind of a Rondé role where he kind of only gets minutes if it really looks like we need an energy boost and just the energy's lacking in the game, whether we're up two, down two, up five, down 10. I want to see Bembry get some run. He looked pretty good in the preseason himself. So, and then obviously on to redacted. I mean, he didn't have a good preseason at all. I mean, forget his legal issues. He just struggled offensively during the preseason. So I could see why Nick Nurse is probably staying away from him. But I think the guys who should probably first get the go at things is Flynn and then Bembry and then Davis. And maybe you take away a little bit of minutes from Norm Powell just off of how he's been playing early in the season. And you just kind of shuffle that towards Flynn. But I think it does go in that order. It goes Flynn, Bembry, and then Davis.
Yeah, agreed. I like that you bring up Flynn's defensive chops, defensive player of the year in his conference in college, one of the best pick and roll players in all of college basketball. Not that they're running. Yeah, they run a lot of pick and roll in football. Yeah. Give me that pick and roll. Okay. Great defender, obviously, defensive player of the year in, what is it, Mountain West Conference? I can't remember what conference.
I believe
San Diego State. Yeah. Defensive player of the year. He was awesome, I thought, in the preseason defensively. Screen navigation, impressive. Point of attack defense, impressive. And a prerequisite for small guards on the Raptors. Really good at digging in on bigs in the post. He got, you know, numerous steals that way. His manipulation of passing lanes with his eyes and his body language, I think he's great. I think it is an excellent indicator of how he'll be able to create for teammates into the future. I talked to PD Webb prior to the draft about Malachi Flynn on a podcast. He liked him a lot, although he liked Grant Riller and Desmond Bane better. Mm-hmm. I talked to Rebel, who's a great, great mind as far as breaking down basketball and prospects, especially if anybody isn't following him, Robel Tussin on Twitter. and you'll probably enjoy it. So feel free to go ahead and check him out. But he also liked Malachi Flynn, not as much as Grant Riller again. But he said, I had him on right after the draft, and he said he's going to be good. And guess what? He was good. He's a good player I'd like to see get minutes for sure. And I would like to see him on ball. I mean, there are opportunities during the game, I think, for Nick Nurse to recognize that Flynn can come on ball and one of Lowry or Fred VanVleet can be off ball. And if things get really hairy, they can just swap. But I think that's a good way to save some of the reps for Flynn to develop. And I think some of the little bit of rest time on court for both Fred and Kyle. I think that's really interesting. Bembry, I like his defensive versatility. I talked about this in the reaction podcast after last night's game. There was like a 2-minute stretch where Bembry, OG, and Siakam all shared the floor, and they switched everything across the top of the defense. That was cool to see. That's a look we might see later on in the year. Was it hugely effective in that game? No. And then Terrence Davis, as far as what he brings to the court, he is able to get into open space as a shooter and a cutter. Those are the big benefits of his game. He looked really, really bad on ball in the preseason and didn't provide any reason, I think, to give him lots of playing time. And defensively, he's always been very gamble adjacent. He likes to gamble a lot, gives up a lot of advantages to the other team. And with the way the team is competing defensively right now, I don't think that helps anything. And not to mention all of the current allegations that he's going through with his legal processions. I don't know what the Raptors plan to do, but that is a factor, whether anybody likes it or not. And it's definitely not good. As far as looking into the next week, got the 76ers, and the Raptors are going to have to try and defend Joel Embiid with their roster, which maybe is not going to be so fun. Then the Knicks on Thursday, and then the Pelicans again on Saturday. Any games you're looking forward to in particular?
I mean, for me, immediately, like, the 76ers are the team that catches my eye, obviously from a talent perspective. But then also, like, this is a team that I don't think we match up really well against this team. You look at their best player, Joel Embiid. I mean, size, this is a guy who's, I mean, with all due respect, I think one of the best big men to ever play basketball, Hakeem Olajuwon. I think he's the closest modern version we've seen to a guy like Hakeem in terms of what he can do in the low post. He can stretch it out a bit. He's, I want to say, a pretty good passer, not an elite passer by any stretch, but a guy that can play make a little bit at the top. Joel Embiid is a guy that his biggest asset versus Toronto is going to be his size. When you look at San Antonio, it was one of the final possessions of the game that really kind of irked me was, I think, LaMarcus Aldridge continuously tapping the ball to himself on the offensive rebound. And there was absolutely nothing Toronto could do. I mean, they had Chris Boucher, Ananobi, Kyle Lowry, Siakam, and VanVleet on the floor with 40 seconds left. And I believe it was Keldon Johnson who drove the ball to the hoop. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it could have been DeJounte Murray.
I think DeJounte.
It could have been, yeah, I think it was DeJounte as well. And we just lacked size down there to really just grab the rebound and continue on with the game. Joel, who knows? I mean, we might see one of those, you know, 25 and 20 games from Joel Embiid, unfortunately, for Toronto. Are we out of it completely? No. I mean, Toronto's still a very good basketball team. This is a team that just really needs to, you know, Kyle Lowry said himself, I mean, he said, we're 0-2, and I haven't had this record in a long effing time. So we have to figure it out sooner or later for our team. We're nowhere near where we want to be defensively, but it takes hard work, it takes dedication, watching film, understanding who we're playing against, and then making adjustments on the fly. So that's the end of the quote. And then Kyle Lowry, he said it perfectly. I mean, this is not where Toronto wants to be defensively. This is probably not where you want to be defensively, particularly heading into a game with the Philadelphia 76ers. But this is also a big bounce back opportunity for Philly. So, or for Toronto, I should say. 0-2, not where you want to be. Not really a panic time for Toronto, but you probably need a game like Philly to turn it around. And then you have an easier opponent in the Knicks. And then you can gain momentum towards the Pelicans.
Yeah, I like that what you bring up is the size really matters when you're talking about Embiid, as far as being the closest analog to Hakeem. I mean, nobody is Hakeem, like you say, but Joel Embiid encompasses so much talent and so much size that it's hard not to draw that comparison. He's very, very impressive and one of the best big men in the league. It's a toss-up between him and Jokic, depending on who you like, as far as defense versus offense. Embiid is a world-ender. I'm not looking forward to watching the Raptors try and contain him. It should be a lot of effort. I mean, the Raptors doubled Zion relentlessly, and that was Zion. Joel Embiid is going to call more action from guards coming to help and dig in on him. And I think it'll be interesting if you're a Philly fan or an NBA fan to watch if Embiid's passing chops have improved, because if we know anything about that game, the Raptors are going to double and they're going to be fast about it. And Joel Embiid is going to have to make decisions as a guy with a ball in his hand. So that remains to be interesting as far as Knicks. If the Raptors lose that game and go 0-4, then you can be pretty disappointed, I think. But it's, as you say, a really tough matchup with the 76ers. And hopefully they build some momentum going into that game against the Pelicans and can assert themselves as the better team and not end up on the wrong end of a really hot three-point run. That feels like a podcast, though, Saul. How do you feel, man?
Yeah, man. This is great so far. I mean, it'd be fantastic if we could rent Marc Gasol for one game from the Los Angeles Lakers to just guard Embiid for that one game, and then we can send him back to LA. But this is good. This was so much fun. I appreciate you bringing me on. This was a lot of fun to talk about each player, what we're expecting from Toronto, what we've seen thus far. I hope to be on soon, hopefully, if you'll have me.
Of course, man. Visits are meant to be numerous. They're supposed to be repeating, all that kind of stuff, and they will be. Before we get out here, though, a huge thank you to you for coming on. But you have the floor if there's anything you want to plug, direct people towards. Maybe it's a book you like, whatever you want to talk about.
For anybody listening that hasn't acquired the PS5 yet, I'm praying for you. I really hope for the best for you. And I honestly mean that, because I have a lot of friends and family who haven't gotten it yet. And I don't want any, you know, bad omen towards me, because this sounds like I'm really just being an a-hole about it. But I really hope you do get that PS5. Anybody who's an Xbox user listening to this, I'm also praying for you that maybe you find the right way in life. Anything to plug specifically? I'm on Raptors Republic on Twitter. If you haven't followed me yet, you can find me SAbdi28 for, you know, banter, Raptor. I mean, I cover the Raptors maybe in a way that's not really orthodox, but hopefully I can make you laugh on my account from time to time. Raptors Republic, I should be there, you know, covering, doing my usual pregame stuff, review stuff, that's about it.
I think Toronto media, as it currently stands, has the best representation of non-orthodox coverage.
Yeah.
As far as, there's a lot of different people who cover the Raptors, and I think the diversity of thought is definitely there, especially people who are, you know, verified and receive, you know, media passes and stuff like that. I think it's great.
Absolutely.
And your pal, the former host of this podcast, William Liu, I think is a credit to that and a big part of that as well. Yeah. So yeah, big shout out, Will Liu.
Yeah, man. I just also want to wish everybody a happy holidays. Hope everyone had a great Christmas if you do celebrate that. Happy Hanukkah, I believe. I don't want to mess that up, but I believe it's around this time of the year. Happy holidays to anyone celebrating. I hope you guys are doing great. I know a lot of us are in lockdown right now, so really just watch over your mental health, watch over your family, call, message your friends. I just hope everyone's having a great holiday season.
Likewise. I also wish that for you, but in less words, because Saul already covered all the bases. So, Hall, thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you for having me, Samson. I really, really appreciate it. Appreciate it. You've been doing a great job, by the way. I mean, Will Liu puts a pretty high standard out there to really just take over for him. But I've listened to tons of your podcasts, the Weekly Reactions, and you've done a great job. So kudos to you. Keep it up. And thank you for having me.
Thanks, man. That means a lot. The initial reaction to me taking over as far as the iTunes reviews was not good. It was bad initially, but I've turned the tide, yeah. I think, which is nice to see. So, but yeah, big shoes to fill. Hopefully I'm doing an all right job. Thank you for saying that, Saul. But listener, that's it for me. That's it for Saul. That's it for you. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoy your day. But whether you're getting into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day and bye.